This is Hereabouts, Asian American Midwest Radio, broadcasted on WFHB. We air every Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. Stay tuned for some more.
Welcome to the 56th episode of Hereabouts, Asian American Midwest Radio. Hereabouts is produced by Indiana University's Asian Culture Center in collaboration with WFHB. We ask critical questions about identity, culture, community, and shared assumptions. This episode is produced by Andrew Pace and Melanie Castillo-Culluther. Our sound engineer is Michael Sears. As we continue to celebrate the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King, we would like to have a conversation about activism, about how we can get involved, and what it takes to get involved in your community. Today, we have a conversation with Ami Gandhi. In this episode, we have a discussion on Asian American Pacific Islander activism, community engagement, and getting involved to address important social issues such as voting rights. Hereabouts is produced by ACC Director Melanie Castillo-Culluther and Andrew Pace. Our research assistants are Srinidhi Venguru and Jenna Adams. And I will now pass it over to Melanie to introduce our guests.
Thank you so much, Andy. Our guest for today, Ami Gandhi, is a senior counsel at the Chicago Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights. And Ami actually is a Hoosier, and she graduated from Indiana University, has received awards from Indiana University's Department of Psychological and Brain Science, the South Asian Bar Association of North America, and from Chicago Fair Trade. Ami earned her JD from the George Washington University Law School and her BA in Psychology and Cognitive Science from Indiana University. Welcome to the show, Ami.
Thank you. It's so nice to be with you.
And I understand that you and your family recently moved to Bloomington from Chicago, right?
Yes, we're getting settled into being back in Indiana. I grew up in Indiana, had been away for many years, and it's nice to be back.
When you say you grew up or you born and raised in Indiana, so you're officially a Hoosier, right?
That's right. I was born and raised in Fort Wayne, Indiana, where my parents still live. My husband is from Evansville, and we went to undergrad in Bloomington, as you mentioned. So we feel like we have really strong ties to Indiana.
Wow. So welcome back for both you and your husband. I didn't know that your husband also went to IU. So it's great.
It's a really, Bloomington and IU are really special places for us. And we remember our college days, which now it's been a long time. We're certainly not young students anymore, but that's really what made us fall in love with Bloomington and why we ended up moving back here many years later.
And I imagine that you've noticed some big changes, you know, from the time that you left as an undergrad and then coming back as a family with two kids, right?
Absolutely. It does seem really different now in many ways. For one, because we're at a different stage in life, so we get to experience the things that are really fun for kids and young people in a town like Bloomington. But also, as you said, it's changed over the years. I remember when there were pretty much riots and some violence happening when Starbucks opened up, and there was a lot of rage against a corporate presence like that being in Bloomington. And now it certainly is very different. Probably some things are different and some things have stayed the same. So I'm excited to re-explore and learn some more about what's happening these days in Bloomington.
Well, you mentioned some of the changes in, you know, just the social movements as well, and how things, you know, when people, there were a lot of protests recently too, especially from the last 2 years here in our little town. But at the same time, and that's because also there were a lot of issues, very, important issues that people care about and that really needs to be addressed. And sometimes we need to express them as well in either going to the legislators and letting them know that we're not happy with some of the bills and things like that. My next question actually, Ami, touched on this because I think people are probably curious that you live here in Indiana, but your work is actually based in Chicago with the CLRCU, which is the Chicago Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights. Could you tell us more, and our listeners as well, what you do at the Chicago Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights?
Sure. I am senior counsel at Chicago Lawyers Committee. We're a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization, and my role is to lead our voting rights work in Illinois and Indiana. Everything our organization does, whether it's voting rights work or other areas of civil rights, is through a racial equity lens. And so it's a real privilege to be able to work with this organization and to get to still do this work in Indiana. I know the name of the organization can be a bit misleading because it has Chicago in the name, but for a number of years now, we have been working on voter protection issues in Indiana in a very gradual way that has increased over time as the needs have increased. And so it's great to be able to continue the voting rights work now from Indiana while still doing Illinois legal work as well.
Thank you for sharing, Ami. That's very fascinating, your experience both in Indiana and Illinois. And we're definitely curious to hear more about your work and especially what you view as very important in the current era. I also just was curious, kind of going back to, you know, we were talking a little bit about our roots here in Bloomington as students and living here in Bloomington. And kind of in that same vein, I was curious about what inspired you to start your career surrounding activism in the first place.
When I went to law school, I had a vague idea, a general idea that I was interested in social justice and in pursuing a public interest career, but I really didn't know what exactly that would mean for me. And it also took me a while to get there in terms of taking the steps to pursue that type of career. And the more experience I got, kind of through trial and error and having a variety of experiences, I got a better sense over time of what my interests were. I never knew at the outset, oh, this is what I want to do in 6 months or 1 year or 5 years. And so for me, it's been a lot of figuring it out as I go along.
And do you also have, as a follow-up, do you also have a lot of, do you find yourself involved in Asian American Pacific Islander centered issues and also involved in a way that it's very focused on our community?
Thankfully, yes, I have had the chance to be involved in our own community, in our Asian American community. My first legal public interest job when I moved over from the law firm context and was looking for something that I was more passionate about was at Asian Americans Advancing Justice Chicago. And through that work and also working with a South Asian focused organization in the Chicago area, it was really an honor to be able to go deeper in working on issues in my own community. And thankfully, I still get the chance, even through my broader civil rights and racial justice work these days, to stay connected with those very organizations and activists. I'm not at the forefront of those movements by any means, but I love being able to stay in conversation and learn from people who are.
That's awesome. And kind of going back to starting out as an activist, what initially inspired you to get involved in these very important causes? I think there might be many out there who might be maybe concerned about like the risks of getting involved in activism or maybe receiving pushback for putting their voice out there. So, and you know, that's something that I relate to personally as well. So I was curious if you, in your experience, faced or experienced any pushback or felt like there were risks associated with your chosen profession.
Yes, absolutely. I can relate to what you're saying because I think for a long time, including in, when I was a student and even beyond that, I assumed that being civically engaged or politically interested must mean the same as being partisan or something controversial or that could have a discomfort or downside associated with it. And I think that that is true for a lot of people and families in our community for different reasons. It may actually be risky to speak out for some people, and I certainly want to be understanding of that. I have found it to be a real thrill to kind of find my place within activism. For different people, it can take different forms, and I try to have a healthy respect for different ways that people might feel comfortable in getting involved. In the South Asian American community, one way that I've tried to open up that conversation with folks and try to be a good listener about what their fears or uncertainty might be about, I've tried to think about starting small, starting simple, asking people if they ever receive email forwards or petitions or links. It might be on WhatsApp, it might be in other forms that get them interested in a certain issue, and ask people, have you ever forwarded something like that on because it's something that you care about or that you have an opinion about that caused an emotion in you? Have you ever voted, which is a privilege for some of us in our community, not available for all because it hangs on citizenship as part of eligibility. But, you know, even the simple act of voting for people who are eligible, it is a brave, civically engaged act as well. For some people, it's recycling or taking other actions like that in their everyday lives. So just trying to break it down a little bit more. And I have found myself to be really passionate about nonpartisan civic engagement. And it has also allowed me a really neat avenue to be able to speak out about any candidate or elected official or party. That doesn't mean that I view them as all being exactly the same. They're not. But it has been really enjoyable to work to hold all government officials accountable and to have the flexibility around that. So that has also been fun for me, and then also eliminate some of the discomfort because I'm not vouching for a particular party or candidate.
That is so refreshing to hear about working on issue base, and it's a nonpartisan effort that you and your team are doing at the Chicago Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights. I understand, Ami, that there are three or four prongs that are major focuses of CLCR that you guys are doing, like mainly to provide legal advocacy on education and housing equity issues and voting rights and civic empowerment. These are very heavy work. And I was wondering, from what I just mentioned, could you tell us which of these important issues are you currently involved in? I imagine all of you work all at the same time on, you know, housing equity issue or our education and civic empowerment. But right now, which ones are you currently involved in?
Yeah. Oh, sure. Of course. I am mostly involved in our organization's voting rights work. And day to day, that is what I am regularly working on. One of the reasons I was drawn to the organization when I joined the staff about 6 years ago is that, to me, it's really inspiring to be able to think about enforcing voting rights for the sake of something, and not just in a vacuum, not just ending everything after election day is over, but to try to think more about, okay, what is it that we're trying to do with whatever change that people hopefully could achieve through elections and that type of participation? And so I love getting the opportunity to learn from my colleagues who specialize in other areas of civil rights, like housing, economic development, education equity, trying to dismantle the school to prison pipeline, for example. And so often they're picking up and running with something after it's clear who has won or lost an election and what the landscape might be of what the further legal or policy changes could be, or what other accountability our government might have to be more responsive to our communities. And so especially now that I live and work in Indiana, it's really opened up the possibilities of what this intersectional kind of civil rights and community work could look like, because I'm going back to my education colleagues, for example, who are experts in that arena and saying, I'm up at night and my blood is boiling about classroom censorship bills that are in the Indiana legislature. Please help me understand them and help me and others in Indiana try to think of ideas about how to be constructive in the face of these distressing challenges. And so it is great to get to learn from people with different types of expertise, is what I'm trying to say. And also, we have a big age range in our staff. That's another reason I really like the work that I do, because there are seasoned advocates and litigators who I can learn from and learn from their experiences and advice. And then younger folks who bring a really important energy and fresh ideas and innovations that I wouldn't have thought of. And so I feel very lucky to be kind of in the middle of that.
Yeah, that's amazing. Specifically, what stuck out to me was how there are all these different disciplines, from education to folks in the legal field, among others, coming together for these causes, especially voting rights. And voting rights and voting participation, those have certainly been, you know, just huge topics that have persisted, especially since the 2020 election, obviously before, but certainly that's something that is very, very relevant these days. And kind of digging into that a little bit, with regards to voting rights, I was curious, like, how do you and your colleagues work to prevent or reduce barriers to voting and civic participation?
Well, I want to back up a little bit and share how I got here and how that relates to what I'm doing now. So my first exposure to voting rights work was poll watching in different neighborhoods in Chicago as part of my previous jobs that were more focused in the Asian American and South Asian communities, and going to neighborhoods where our communities live and making sure that community members who are eligible to vote but who are still in the process of learning English have the help that they need and that they're legally entitled to, so that they can make sense out of a ballot and feel like they're getting the choices and the education that they need to make an informed choice. And so through working to increase language access to the polls, especially in communities like the Chinese American community, Indian American community, the list goes on. That really was the first chance that I had as an attorney and as a community member to gain access to a lot of different polling places in different neighborhoods, look up directions about how to go to a neighborhood I'd never been to before, and kind of be in that environment after I finished my work, looking for restaurants nearby and kind of trying to get to know people more in the area. It really got me excited about that energy around the voting environment and so many people looking to make a positive impact. And if they were facing barriers, trying to be creative together about how could we get past that barrier, but quickly and in time for them to still be able to vote that day, not have a prolonged theoretical battle about different legal research issues, but just try to be practical in the moment and help someone to successfully vote. So fast forwarding to the work that I get to do now, we lead voter protection programs across Illinois and Indiana, where for every single election, whether it's a big high-profile presidential election or an election that matters, that might be in an off-cycle timing, that matters more on a hyper-local level, to help voters over the phone and in person with any kind of questions or problems that they may have. Sometimes they're really straightforward, discrete questions about what do I have to show in order to register to vote, or where is my polling place? What time do the polls close? Sometimes it's something more involved or sensitive than that. But whether it's a small question, whether it's a big question, just helping people to feel comfortable to call us or to talk to us in person so that we can give them the information they need in a nonpartisan way. And then from those, and our hotline is 866-OUR-VOTE, 866-OURVOTE. And people can call us from anywhere in the country, but our team focuses on calls coming from Illinois and Indiana. And there are companion lines for community members who are comfortable in other languages other than English, such as the Hotline 888 API vote. And there are others as well. And people may be wondering, okay, what about all the most of the days of the year when there's no election? You know, what are you doing then? So we take the data and stories from election time when our phones are ringing off the hook. And that helps us look at, okay, what is an issue that could be addressed at a more systemic level? Is there legislation that needs to be passed so that we get fewer phone calls in the first place, so that people have some more straightforward, fair, streamlined process to navigate voting rights issues in a more proactive, preventative way? So we work with community members to write and pass legislation to educate people about their rights so that they're equipped with the information they need. And also as a last resort, if absolutely needed, if nothing else is working, if trying to collaborate with or negotiate with a government official is just not getting anywhere, as a last resort, we file litigation in the courts if we need to. And we are really grateful for those chances to interact with voters in a lot of different ways.
It sounded like very, you know, there's so much at stake in the kind of work that you do. And so much, when I say at stake, is that making sure that people actually understand and appreciate that what they have, that if they can vote, it actually can make a difference. And to ensure that you and your team are making sure that it's everyone is able to exercise their right to vote. And that's really inspiring. I wonder if it's okay to share here on Hereabouts. For those of you who are just tuning in, we have Ami Gandhi as our guest here for today. And Ami, if it's okay to share, do you see any barriers for voting that we should be aware of? Barriers, especially for the Asian American community?
Unfortunately, there has been a sharp rise in barriers for voters of color, including Black people, Latino people, Asian American people, and other communities of color in the recent years. And, you know, we're getting to a point when this is an election year, 2022. And when do we change gears from insisting upon change to trying to move forward with the system we have and help our community members be best informed about what rules they have to follow to be able to vote and have their vote counted? And so, yes, there are certainly barriers, including voter registration barriers and racial disparities that continue to persist, even in this day and age, unfortunately, language access barriers for our community members who are citizens and who are in the process of learning English. And in the meantime, while they're still learning, need and deserve access to written and oral translations in their respective languages, just to name a few. And so while there are certainly barriers and they're on the rise, unfortunately, including in places like Indiana and Georgia and other places that are big, where Asian American populations are growing, mm-hmm. We also know that there's a lot of excitement in our community about persevering through those barriers and being equipped as best as we can with the information we need to still be able to vote.
Yeah, absolutely, Emmy. And I think what is inspiring me right now is that excitement that you've been talking about. You know, we hear all about these barriers and these issues from both nationally and also locally in our communities. And you know, I think since our show is based here in Bloomington and specifically around IU, we hope and we assume that many of our listeners might be within that college age demographic and, you know, very much aware and energized to make a difference in their communities, especially with issues such as voting rights. So I was curious if you have any advice for young activists who want to get involved more in their community or to get involved in areas such as AAPI activism.
I am so inspired by our young people and our communities who are really leading the way and who can give me advice as opposed to me giving them advice. But that said, I think there are some concrete ways that even if people are busy with school and work, that they can help during an election year, whether it's volunteering for our national nonpartisan election protection program, for example, helping to answer calls to 888-API-VOTE if they're bilingual, or 866-OUR-VOTE if they are comfortable in English. Those are some discrete volunteer opportunities where we would love to diversify the ranks of our pro bono volunteers. And also, I would say we all should not put too much pressure on ourselves. These are very challenging times for ourselves and our families. And if 2022 is the time that people might get involved and volunteer and increase our community civic engagement, that's phenomenal. And also, we got to take care of ourselves and everyone, including young people, we should be patient with ourselves to know that opportunities will continue to come up to be civically engaged and fight for voting rights, whether it's now or in the future.
Thank you, Ami. I could not agree more. We know that activism takes an enormous amount of people's time and energy, and it can also take a toll on people's well-being. So yeah, self-care is very important. And as we go with our day-to-day work and community involvement, especially there's so much uncertainty as we live in pandemic era. Again, I want to thank our guest, Ami, for joining us today and for choosing Bloomington as their new home.
Yeah, I'd like to echo Melanie. Thank you so much, Ami, for taking the time to speak with us today and sharing your experiences as well as your advice. I found that was such a very refreshing and also inspiring conversation, especially for those of us who are looking to get plugged into our communities and start advocating for change that we'd like to see. So thank you again, Ami.
Thank you.
And we'd also like to say thank you to Jenna and Trinity, our two student staff members who helped us prepare for this episode, as well as to you, our listeners, for tuning in today. We hope that you are doing well. And Hereabouts will be back in 2 weeks with a brand new episode, and we hope to see you then. Take care.
Thank you for listening to Hereabouts, Asian American Midwest Radio, broadcasted on WFHB. Again, we air every Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. Stay tuned for some more. See you next week.